see the other, while searching very quietly for prey. We had been walking for about 5 minutes separately, when I heard my mother call my name. I was bewildered. Why would she yell like that? She would scare away any nearby deer. I came upon the hill and saw my mother looking in the opposite direction. She stood so still, as if afraid of something. Then I heard the growling. In front of her, what had to be a wolf, it was far too large to be a dog or coyote, was staring at her and baring its teeth. Not a moment after I gasped, the thing locked its eyes on me. Instinctually, I ran. I ran as fast as I could. I heard my mother shouting hysterically, and I heard the sound of paw steps behind me. Tears fell down my face. I was so terrified. I was now at the edge of the woods, and I literally threw myself at the trunk of a nearby tree and climbed for dear life. Eventually, I made it to a low-hanging branch and looked down at my attacker. Below me, there was no wolf, but a man in animal fur. I looked around the field, and no wolf. What? How? I was so sure it was a wolf, an animal. Even my mother believed it to be a wild creature of some sort. The man stared at me behind the fur and ran off into the woods. Crying, my mother beckoned me out of the tree. When I was down, she hugged me tightly and, without a word, we ran back to camp, packed up, and left that place. And we haven't returned since. Number 16. A Knock in the Woods by Kiru Lupine. Okay, so first off, I need to give some background on myself. I am a 26-year-old male living in the woods of the Pacific Northwest. My home is so rural that we have only had DSL for a few years now. My home is on a mountain and surrounded by thick forest on all sides. The mountain itself is covered in old logging trails, and quad paths make it easy to hike all over the mountain. In my years living out here, I have been out after dark a few times, but honestly, it never gets any less creepy. But what happened this night? The night I'm about to describe to you. I'm never going to go out after dark if I can help it. My family has a pair of horses, brothers who have been together their whole lives. Anytime one is gone without the other, you will immediately know, because the brother left behind will start whining and nickering. Just after dusk had fallen, I hear one of the horses having a fit. I didn't really need to go see, since I knew one of them had gotten out. So I grabbed a strong flashlight, my 12-gauge, and my good boots before heading out. Sure enough, the remaining horse was standing at the gate, nickering toward the woods. I quickly started towards the path, leading off to an old logging trail that goes all around the woods. During the day, I hike all over this mountain to get exercise as well as it gives you time to think and relax. As soon as you step out after dark, nothing is the same. The sound of birds are gone, the warmth of the sun gone, and all that is left is the creaking of trees, the rustling of bushes, and the sounds of branches dropping off. Anyone who has gone hunting at night or just hiking in the dark will tell you that you tend to notice every little sound, every twig break, and every leaf rustle. All of this adds up to drive your imagination wild with thoughts of horrors lurking just out of sight. Just behind the horse pen is a small path that leads to a large logging road. The path comes out right on a hairpin turn, giving you two paths. Right-hand path is uphill, and the left-hand path goes downhill. Last time the horse got out, he was found halfway up the right path, so that's where I started searching. As I walked, I made a habit to move the light to illuminate the forest, looking for the shine of animal eyes. This is one of the easiest methods for finding animals, since the horse could easily walk off the path to find food. But I found nothing. After a half an hour of searching, I stopped dead. The hair on the back of my neck stood on end. The feeling of being watched washed over me, and I start shining my light everywhere, looking for any glint of light off of eyes, and I listen for any sound of movement. All I hear is a soft breeze rustling the trees, and a few branches falling in the distance. It's not unusual for a bear or even a cougar to cause this kind of feeling, so I start to head back. As I walk, I keep my light shining into the woods, hoping to see the horse so I can get him back home where he will be safe. Cougars have been known to attack horses and even people when they're hungry enough, so I was starting to get worried. That feeling of being watched never left me, yet I heard nothing that would tell me I was being followed. When I made it back to the hairpin turn, I started heading down the left path. As soon as I started down it, I'm stricken with an ungodly level of fear. I shone my light everywhere, over all the brush and trees, but I couldn't see anything. I knew I had to check the path for the horse, so I keep telling myself to stop acting like a child and go look. Just for added effect, I racked my shotgun and told myself that a round of 00 buck was more than enough to handle anything I found. Finally, I convinced myself to move, and I started down the path. Despite my feeling of dread growing, I kept going, and I soon noticed something shining on the path. To try and distract myself, I focused on the odd green shine. I headed towards it, trying to think of what it could be, when I hear something that stops me dead in my tracks. There was a knocking sound, like a knuckle rapping against a door. I heard three distinct knocks just ahead of myself, and as soon as I shone my light towards it, I hear a second set of knocks a little ways behind me. The second set could clearly be heard coming from the upper path, and it too was three knocks that mirrored the first set. The first thought that ran through my head was that it was a signal for a trap or an ambush. I kept shining the light back and forth between the two spots I heard it, but I still saw nothing. Slowly, I started backing up the path, all the while my shotgun was swiveling back and forth. I did not want to turn my back on either spot for too long. I ended up walking about half the path backwards in an attempt not to get surprised. It wasn't until I was back at the path to my home that I saw something finally. Two sets of eyes glowing from under the brush, and as soon as I saw it, I aimed at them slowly, but both sets of eyes slowly vanished. They didn't move away, and they didn't blink. They just vanished suddenly without any sound of movement. That was the final straw. I decided to never go walking in the forest at night, and I hightailed it back. As I came back, I saw something that made me go from terrified to absolutely furious in a second. The horse had returned and was staring at me as if to say, "About time you got back, now let me in." I put the horse away and went to bed, vowing to strengthen the fence to keep him from ever getting out again. The next morning, I mentioned what happened to my father, as he's been in the woods at night for many different occasions. After I finished my tell, he asked very specifically if I only heard the knocking. And when I answer yes, he gives me an odd look, but just nods. I asked him if he has had any such experience, and he simply tells me, "Oh, of course, but not knocking. I have heard loud breathing, rustling bushes with nothing there, and of course something running away very quickly. I've since fixed that fence and went back to where I heard the knocking during the day, but I found nothing of interest. The odd green thing I saw shining was a deflated balloon, which in itself is a strange find. If I ever have to go out after dark, I'm definitely going to bring someone with me." Number 17. Real Wendigo Encounter by John Jay. Ever since I could remember, I've loved hunting. Squirrels, deer, it all started as something my father and I did together. But when he died, I couldn't help but see myself out there more and more. It was his favorite thing, and I was lucky enough to be a part of it with him. God knows I miss him. After this experience, though, I'm scared to head back to those woods. It was a snowy Saturday morning. The sun had just come up. That day I had been hunting squirrels, but the woods were deathly quiet and still. I sat silently under the skeleton of an old oak tree. Whether or not I saw or killed anything really didn't matter. The best part was the beauty. Waking up early and soaking all of it in, it was worth every second of the quiet and the cold. Everything was suddenly stirred to life by a gruff, grunting sound. The noise was similar to a buck call, but so much lower and rough. At first, I thought a massive buck was dying in the snow. Then, it came again, but close enough to make my blood run cold. Whatever it was wasn't dying. It had moved an impossible amount of distance within those few seconds. I honestly had no idea what I was hearing. I did the only thing I could do. I sat still and tried not to breathe. Only moments later, I saw something that has changed my life in the worst possible way. The head of a deer, with a sickly look and eyes with way too much white, appeared from behind a tree 15 yards in front of me. It was motionless. Worst of all, the damned thing was about 9 feet off the ground. I've never seen any deer that tall, and this thing looked like it had just been in a fight and diseased by some unknown plague. It wasn't a pretty sight. But when a clawed hand appeared just below it, I knew that this was no deer. It sounds like something out of a children's book of scary stories, I know, but I wish that's all it was. These bony fingers curved around the trunk of the tree, disgusting nails sliding along the bark. The way its head was angled, it was as if it was staring at me. Instinct took over. I grabbed my gun and ran as quickly as possible back to my truck. I had never run so fast in my life, but somehow I still ran faster when I heard that grunting again. Closer and closer it seemed to come, no matter how far I ran from that place. When I reached my truck, I opened and slammed the door shut. I started it and floored the damn thing. But before I really took off, I made one mistake. I glanced into the woods. As if it had been copied and pasted, that thing's decaying head and clawed hand were now protruding from behind a pine tree at the forest's edge. I'm sorry, Dad, but I don't know if I'll ever be going back there. Number 18. The Flaming Glow at the Cocoa Grove by Breno P. The following story happened to my aunt at the countryside of Amazonas, Brazil. The whole region is known to own a lot of lore, of course, as it was natives' land, and a lot of this lore got mixed with Christian and European culture, creating a strange, colorful, and vivid amalgam of weird legends and degenerated beliefs in each independent village. Boogeyman stuff, I used to think, but now, things made me think twice before mocking old stories of ghosts and goblins. When I was a child, this tale was told on all occasions when family was together, transmitted orally from member to member, old to young, to keep the family aware of things that lurk in the dark. And now, I share it with you and you Night Watchers. In this story, the names are real, of real people, almost all of them dead now, and maybe they'll not bother with it. Maybe, I hope. In the 80s, all my family was committed to make money by plantations. We had a lot of them, guarana, cattle, coffee, and fishing. But Uncle Cazuza wanted to have a cocoa grove. At the time, the national production of cocoa was at its peak, and made sense to invest in one. But he needed a large, wet, and descending land to crop the cocoa. After a month or two in searching, he finally found a piece of excellent land for a very cheap price. At the time, it was about 5,490 Brazilian cruzados. That was the Brazilian money at the moment. Now this amount was worth maybe 200 reais, what is about less than $100. It was very cheap, and the Riparians seemed very eager to leave. He said to my uncle that his daughter was sick at the capital, and he needed money for her treatment. So he was happy to sell the land, and the deal was done. 6 months later, Uncle Kazuza and Aunt Lily were living inside the cocoa grove, and the grove was almost mature and ready for the harvest. They were happy with the place and the neighborhood, which consisted of one single fisherman family who lived across the stream. The name of the old fisher lady was Nazare, and her husband's name is lost in time. Maybe we'll never remember it, so from now on we'll just call him the fisherman. As a true man of the Amazon rainforest, and still with hot Portuguese blood running in his veins, my uncle's hobby was to hunt, and the Amazonian woods had plenty of prey. Tapirs, pacas, that is, a little mammal, very tasty by the way, and birds and harts. One night, Uncle Kazuza went to the fisherman's house and proposed a hunt. The rainy season was afoot, and would be impossible to cross the river and buy victuals on Manaus, the main city. So they would just hunt, smoke, and salt the meats and stalk them. The fisherman agreed, but was worried about his wife, who happened to be really old and fragile. He himself was way older than my uncle. He had experience and, most important, knew the area. The fisherman claimed that his father was the first white to live at that part of the Amazon River. Being said, Uncle Kazuza believed him and trusted him. It's always best to hunt at night in the Amazon. Despite the legends of ghost Indians and forest spirits, the animals are all sleeping and just the predators are out. The biggest worry was to find a jaguar. They are very vicious and ferocious in the Amazon. They can grab you and not leave a trace of blood. They are also very good swimmers and will try to kill you near water so you can't run. I think that the jaguars from Amazon learned that behavior from the old tribes around. As the men were hunting, their two wives, Aunt Lily and Nazare, stayed at home, sewing and chatting. The hunt would last at least 2 days, so they were very relaxed and talkative. Around 10 at night, the dogs started to bark at the cocoa groves. Even though there were fences around the cocoa grove that kept out animals and occasional thieves, the women started to get scared. They didn't have any means of protection, and Nazare, being old, could not fight off a thief. Aunt Lily stood up and started to close the house, all the doors and windows secured. But it was a simple house, mostly built with the products of land, wood, and straw. The brick walls could hold a menace, but the windows were made of wood and straw, easy to trespass even with bare hands. The dogs kept barking, and a weird, loud sound started to come from the cocoa grove. My aunt was in total despair and ran to the kitchen to grab a knife or something, and over the barks, they heard a distinct sound of footsteps, but not human, definitely not human. Whatever it was big and came from the cocoa grove. Nazare stood up in the little living room. The women could hear the thing stomping over the cocoa trees and the fence. The dogs stopped barking, and now they were crying in fright, as if the devil was hunting them. Suddenly, the straw window opened wide, and a bright light like a torch or an eye entered the house. Aunt Lily used to say that it was like the noon sun inside the house. She fell on the floor and started to scream. Nazare was screaming too, begging the thing to go away. And suddenly she yelled, "Pray, Bedpan. Grab a Bible and pray." But Aunt Lily answered, "I don't know. I remember nothing." The thing invaded the little house with its cold flames. Not hot, only bright and blinding. A big ball of yellow light, but not bright yellow, but feverish, like catarrh. The old woman stood up and started to yell the credo, an old prayer to shelter yourself from evil spirits. The voice was so loud, my aunt says that all the house was vibrating and the dogs kept barking. Nazare screamed and screamed all sorts of prayers and laments to God towards the creature. The thing started to twinkle and vanish. The sound of steps restarted. Slowly and slowly, the straw window closed until all the light dimmed, drowning all the rooms in a soft darkness. And Lily could hear the thing going away, back to the cocoa groves. The sound of steps very far now. The dogs ran after it. None of them came back. After a week, Uncle Kazuza left and came back to Manaus to work with my grandpa. To this day, the land and cocoa groves are still our property, but no one lives there. In the early 90s, my mom started to rent the place for parties and events, and then to build a house to host parties. But nothing ever lasted. Only the cocoa remains. I think that whatever is there was preventing the men to steal the fruits of the land, as the old Indians would say, because we don't need them. They were the product of our greed. After all of these events, my uncle remembered of the riparian and what he said about the treatment of his daughter. But if he needed so much money, why would he sell that excellent and fertile land for such a small price? He must have known about the thing that roams the cocoa groves. But what was it? For years, this question haunted us. Aliens, maybe, or some kind of natural spirit. I don't know, and part of me wants to discover. Sometimes, when I'm going to the countryside, I pass in front of the wet, descending land. One day, all of this will be mine, and I'll have to do something with it. Rent, build a house, or a plantation. I'm thinking about a cane field, but definitely not corn. We all know that corn attracts even weirder shit.
So basically, it's a form of intensive therapy.
Number 19. Creepy Creatures on the Road, from Bo Peters. When I was 20, I used to work as a pizza delivery guy in a small city in northern Germany. On my way home, I had to drive a few miles on a remote state street that led through forest and farmland. One night, it must have been around 1 in the morning, there was a huge thunderstorm, and I had to drive slowly and carefully. When I came to a road junction, I noticed a figure standing in the middle of the road. It looked like a tall and slender man in a long black leather cloak with a hood. At first, I thought it was someone who had an accident and was looking for help, but when my headlights hit the figure, I noticed that the cloak, especially the hood of it, appeared to be empty. My headlights did not illuminate the cloak whatsoever, like they should have. It was just the lightning reflecting on the smooth, wet surface that allowed me to see the shape. Of course, I floored the gas pedal and went as fast as I dared. A couple of miles later, I ran into the same, or at least a very similar figure, again standing right in the middle of the road and not moving at all. This time, I didn't even slow down and rushed right past it. It scared me to death. A couple of weeks later, this time no thunderstorm, just a beautiful warm summer night, I encountered another creature right where I saw the black figure before. It looked like a giant deer, but without fur, with pale, gray-white skin. It was extremely skinny, almost skeletal, and had an abnormally long and thin tail. It ran along the side of the road and kept pace with me quite easily as I drove past. Only when I slammed the gas pedal and went suicidally fast, it started to fall behind and eventually disappeared in a crop. The very next day, I quit that job and never used that road at night again. Number 20. Duke Zla, by Anonymous. I want to start off by saying all of this happened in 2011 in Siberia, Russia, very thickly wooded. I am going to relay as much info as possible without giving any info on mission objectives at the time. You may be wondering why there were Americans in Russia, but that is a question I'd rather not answer. At the time, I was in the Marine Corps Forces Special Operations Command, or MARSOC. Beginning the story, my team was split up into two squads at the time, into two groups of seven. We were to rally back up into a team at camp, so me and my squad of six were not expecting any resistance. We did not have our weapons drawn. Approaching a cliff with a couple hundred foot drop, we started surveying the area below and noticed a small town in the forest below that was not mapped. After calling it in, we were given an order to make our way to this town to investigate. As we hiked, we noticed the trail along the ridge that would double time to the bottom of the cliff and made the decision to take it. After we were halfway down the trail, we heard a bellowing howl above us that almost made me lose balance. It didn't sound like a wolf at all. We looked back up the trail and we saw something that we could have mistaken for a human if it weren't for its arms that were touching the ground. The thing was at least standing 9 feet tall. When it was clear it had our attention, it moved back over the summit so that we could not see it. At this point, we had all drawn our weapons and started moving down the trail at a much faster pace. Once we were at the bottom and were back in the woods, I noticed that everything was silent except us crunching through the snow. We could see the small town now, but upon further inspection, all the houses weren't that I would call a house, more like shacks, some not even completely built, just half of a shack, and there was nobody in sight. We made our way into this town and noticed the recently put out fire pit and lots of blood and meat in some of the shacks. We called this in as well, and we were told to stay put until the other squad arrived, which wouldn't be until the next morning. So we made a fire in the fire pit that was there, and were all around the fire talking about pointless things, like another squad mate going to see his wife when back in home territory, when out of nowhere, the same howl came from just outside the light of the fire, so loud that I swear it could have shaken the rocks. Immediately, we were all up and had our weapons ready, hot-clicking on our beams, scanning the surrounding area, and seeing nothing when a huge rock hit the ground next to me. We take cover in a shack that was close, and another rock hit one of the walls and goes straight through. We were finally given the command to engage on sight and press where we think the rock came from. Three of us flanked from around another shack and found nothing. Then we saw it, or saw them, I should say, at least a dozen of the same thing we saw on the cliff, covered in white fur and long arms, almost dragging the ground. They were huge. They were just standing there looking at us with black eyes like nothing I had ever seen. One of them making another howl, and then turning and going back into the woods. The rest followed, and I wondered why we didn't fire. I looked over at my squad mates, and they all had wide eyes, just as me. We got command to pursue, and, hesitantly, we did. We walked into the dark forest, following the tracks we could see, when we heard another howl to our right. It was followed by the sound of someone yelling. As we all turned toward the noise, we noticed that one of us was missing. We immediately gave chase to where we thought he was taken, when we came to a blood trail. We followed suit as fast as we could. We caught a glimpse of something in front of us. As we got closer, we saw another one of those things with our squad mate in its hand. I quickly shot at least half of my magazine into it, and they both dropped with a thud. I rushed over to my squad mate and realized that he was almost decapitated. I became overwhelmed with a mixture of fear and anger. We grabbed our fallen comrade and returned to the town, setting up a perimeter. Needless to say, none of us got any sleep that night. After we returned to base camp the next day, we were given orders to never speak of it. My squadmate was written off as killed in action in Afghanistan. We were told these things are called Duke's Law. In English, this means spirit of evil. I'll never forget what happened, and I don't think any of the others will. We didn't find the dead thing's body, and honestly, I didn't care. I think I could say the same for the rest of us. We just wanted to get home and be safe. Number 21. In the Trees by Adrian B. My name is Adrian, and I was 13 when this story happened. Me and my other friend, also 13, got bored and decided to take a walk through the woods before the sun set. It took us about 15 minutes to reach our fort we had made. The forest was super dense, and the woods were often dark even when the sun was out, so it was always a little spooky to be out there. After we had reached our little fort, he and I had been talking about comics and toys for a while and didn't keep track of time. All of a sudden, we had a strange feeling of dread overcome us. We tried to feel safe because we were at a fort we had made a long time ago that we always went to. It was in a really big tree. We call it the tree because it's the largest, oldest oak around, and it's hard to miss. Then we heard the talking, very faint talking, and after a bit we started to make out things like, "Come here," and "Help," in a very odd, raspy voice. Again, we shrugged it off, and I didn't realize until I had checked my watch that it was 5 minutes until sunset. We were having a good time at our fort, so we decided to stay. But we heard the noises again. This time they were louder, and an almost spot-on impersonation of me and my friend, but slightly deep and raspier. We were both hearing it loud and clear now, and decided it was really time to head back. We heard rustling and louder voices, and they sounded closer and closer every second. I heard, right above me, the phrase, "Help me," in a really croaky and raspy voice. I had asked my friend where the hell it came from. I asked him in a very concerned voice, but he just stood there, still, eyes wide open, staring above us. He let out a blood-curdling scream, and we both hit the ground running. He shouted, "On the tree!" I yelled back mid-pace, "Which tree?" I had no idea what was going on. Above me, I heard breathing, and I smelled a mix of what smelled like morning breath and blood. And somehow, I felt hot breath on me. I couldn't help but stop, frozen still. I shook it off and ran harder than before, quickly catching up to my friend. I ran for 15 minutes straight, all the way home, and my lungs were on fire. I didn't realize how tired and out of breath I was until I finally stopped running. I was just lucky to get away. As soon as we got home, I had asked him what he saw. But every time I would ask, he would black out for a moment and start staring. And when he snapped out of it, he would tell me something like, "Shut up," or "It doesn't matter." To this day, he hasn't told me, and I've never mentioned it again. And we haven't been back to our fort. I could only imagine what was there with us in those woods, and I'm thankful we got away. Number 22. Goatman on the Road. Submitted by 123 Kripke. Cabins are so creepy. I guess it's my fault, though, for letting myself get creeped out by something that's supposed to be a vacation getaway. But I can't help but think about all the dozens of stories I've read online about creepy experiences at cabins. I can say for sure that I never thought I'd experience something for myself. My friend Laura and I decided to go up to my grandma's cabin one weekend during the winter. The cabin was deep in the woods of North Dakota. It was a beautiful place. I often stayed there with my grandparents as a child. Now, I was in college, and it was time to relax after some pain-in-the-ass finals. The first night was exactly what I hoped it would be. We played video games, talked, and laughed. I spent the morning drinking coffee and reading a book on the couch. I wish I could spend every day like that. Well, it wasn't until night that things got a little weird. "Hey, Melissa." Laura called to me as she walked inside. She had just gone to the gas station in my Jeep to get some cigarettes. "What's up?" I asked. When I walked around the corner, I noticed she had entered through the front door backwards, keeping her eyes on something just beyond the glass of the door. "Do you see it?" she murmured. I almost didn't hear her. I leaned over and looked out of the living room window. All I saw was the snow-covered road that emerged from the woods and led up to the driveway. "I don't see what..." Before I could finish, a tall, dark silhouette stepped from the tree line by the road on the right and onto the road itself. It had a long stride. In two steps, it had crossed nearly onto the other side of the road. It just stopped there. We could see it turning in every direction. "Who the hell is that?" You could hear the confusion in Laura's voice. "I have no idea. There's no cabins anywhere close to here. That gas station is the closest thing to us. And it's a 20-minute drive out." My mind was reeling. Who's the guy just standing there out in the driveway? The figure then turned back toward the tree line from which it had originated and took two long steps. It disappeared quickly into the woods. I threw on my jacket and boots. Without a word, Laura did the same. We have always been a curious pair. Fear always came second to our curiosity. Maybe that's why I can read hours of scary stories. Anyway, we stepped out onto the driveway and headed toward the beginning of the road that entered the woods. The snow itself was at least 8 inches deep. As soon as we stood where that man was, we saw the tracks on the ground. Hooves. There were obvious hoof prints on the ground like a ram or sheep had been walking around. We did not see anyone or anything but that man a few seconds ago. Unless he was walking a goat or something that was bleach white like the snow, there were no animals out there. We looked at each other and quickly walked back inside. Together, we sat on the couch and warmed ourselves with the fireplace. The TV played MTV something or other, but we both couldn't help but feel a little odd. Eventually, it escaped my mind, and I was able to fall asleep pretty easy. But loud stomping in the middle of the night forced me back to life. Thud, thud, thud. I couldn't make out where it was coming from, but it yanked me from my sleep. Droopy-eyed, I peeked out of the windows of my room. It snowed lightly outside, but I didn't see anyone out there. It must have been Laura stomping down the hallway to get a glass of water. She had never been very light-footed. Thud, thud, thud. The sound came again, and I knew immediately that the sound was not coming from within the house. Now wide-eyed, I got up with my blanket and headed toward the living room. It must have been a full moon that night, because the window shone with quite a bit of light. Enough that I could make out the details of the tree line through the windows. I stepped quietly into the living room. Laura was already there, kneeling behind the recliner with her face peeking over it. Before I could ask what the hell she was doing, a tall silhouette appeared behind the curtains of the window. Thud, thud, thud. Someone was on our porch. They walked back and forth from the door to the window over and over again. It looked like he was trying to peek through, trying to find a gap in the curtains. Instinctively, I darted over to the recliner and ducked next to Laura. "He's been there for the last hour," she whispered to me, even though I doubt he could hear us. Mouth open, I watched in horror as this figure walked around our porch, stomping far too loudly than I thought possible. I figured the boots or shoes of anyone would have crunched with all that snow. We didn't have an awning out there. Then he stomped back over to the door and started pounding with his fist. And I'm not talking violently knocking. He was trying to break down the freaking door. I couldn't keep myself from shaking, and it wasn't from the cold. Suddenly, the knocking stopped. That's when we heard the loudest, weirdest sounding scream. There's no way that was human. The scream literally lasted for the duration of a minute. 60 seconds at least of some otherworldly screech. As quickly as it started, it stopped. No stomping, no screaming. All but the howling of the wind had become silent. We didn't go back to our rooms, and we didn't go to sleep. We sat there together, hunched in the floor all night. As soon as daylight broke through those thankfully thick curtains, we packed up and left. I have no idea what we saw out there, but there were hundreds of footprints on our porch. There wasn't a single human footprint in the snow outside, save for our own. Whether that thing was human or not, I want to know one thing. Where the hell did those hoof prints come from? Number 23. Freshwater Monster. Submitted by Washcloth. Beware the waters of this planet. They are as vast as they are deep. Man may never know the true magnitude of the oceans and lakes of the world. Forgive my artsy introduction, I had to say it. The following experience has really confirmed for me how small I am, how small we are compared to the world, and just how uncharted the entirety of the Earth really is. You'd think that, by now in 2016, we'd have been able to capture pictures of everything and anything that had escaped us before, like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster. Surely, if one of these things existed, we'd have photographic proof, right? This is what I once thought, but I now know how freaking wrong I was. That was a terrible, shallow way for me to think. Now, on to my experience. I was a freshwater diver. It was a hobby. I wish I could have been doing it for a living, but what's you gonna do? Every weekend, if I had the time, I would head out with a friend with my boat and dive for a couple of hours. We would go out to whichever deep ponds or lakes we could find, and we'd take turns using the expensivest hell diving suit we had mostly bought. A lot of it we actually had to fix or make up with our own fixtures. All in all, the suit worked perfectly. The tank held well. The airline didn't leak. It was everything we needed. This particular day, I had actually remembered to bring my camera. We had a lot of stuff to pack when we did this, so it was far too easy to forget that damned waterproof camera we had. We found an especially large pond. It was pretty much a lake. It was really muddy, but that didn't keep me away. Anyway, once we had the boat unloaded and we hopped inside, we drove toward a shallow area on the opposite side that seemed clearer than the rest. It seemed promising enough. It was first up. I pulled up my mask and goggles and dropped in. The water was as murky as I thought it would be. I'd say I was only able to see about 5 yards in front of me. There were no fish at the top, but I was sure to see something as I swam further down. Everything was a tint of brown. The further down I went, the less light broke through the muddy water. I followed the bank, gripping onto roots and rocks that jutted out to pull myself down. It was way easier than just kicking and pushing myself lower. I made my way slowly to deeper water. I kept my eyes open, looking for any interesting formations or curious fish. I saw nothing out of the ordinary, though. I could feel the pressure on my body. I think I was about 10 yards down. But I pushed down further. I wanted to see everything I possibly could. Hell, if I could hit the bottom, that would be amazing. It was starting to get pretty dark. In my left hand, I had my waterproof torch, so I clicked that on and looked around. My stomach turned when I saw it. Black, scaly skin. It almost looked like a shimmering wall, but it must have been from a fish of some sort. It was right in front of my face. The thing was huge. So big, in fact, that despite the light, I could not see the head or the tail of it. I wasn't sure if I was staring at its midsection, but it was thick and tall. When I looked closer, I could see that the thing was moving. I wanted to swim upward back to the boat, but I was starting to feel more excited than anything. Eventually, its visible body began to thin, as if the tail was about to come up. I readied the camera for the tail of whatever this thing was. Finally, it came, then stopped directly in front of me. This wasn't the tail. The creature must have been backing up, because I was locking eyes with this thing. Its head was narrow and long, with a mouth opening and closing, revealing hundreds of teeth about the size of my fingers. I believe it was staring at me, those big black orbs with cloudy gray fixtures in the middle of them. It looked exactly like an eel, but this was the biggest living thing I had personally ever seen. Slowly, being sure to not make any sudden movements, I pulled up my camera and took a picture. I tried to shine the torch on it, but I would just have to wait and see what would show up on the photo. I looked closely at it, and it seemed it was floating ever closer to me. I had to get out of that water immediately, but if I kicked too hard or swam too fast, this thing would think of me as food and nothing else. Keeping myself from floating up, I held onto the rocks and roots again. I ascended as slowly as possible, my back now facing the eel-like thing. Every inch closer to the surface was a relief. It seemed to take an eternity, but eventually I was only a few feet from the top. Summoning my courage, I looked over my shoulder to peer down where I was. I wanted to see if the thing was still there. This creature was right behind me still, but closer, its snout almost touching my shoulder. Seeing that, I freaked out and almost jumped out of the water. I clambered into the boat, all the while my friend yelling, wondering why the hell I was so panicky. I told him to get us back to shore as fast as he could, and I would tell him. And I did. I asked how he didn't see something so huge and dark just below the water. He said he was texting someone. Figures. Even worse, though, when I had the picture developed, it was all black. I guess it was too dark for the camera to pick up on anything. But ever since that day, I've been way more cautious when I've stepped foot in the water. The sheer size of that creature has made me realize a few things. No matter how sure we are that we know everything, there will always be mysteries out there. Also, if that thing had been more hungry than curious that day, I believe I wouldn't be around to share this story with you. Number 24. Wendigo at the Cabin by Fuchsia. Some friends and I, back in 1998, had decided to stay in my best friend Nick's parents' cabin for the weekend. If I recall correctly, the place was somewhere on the east edge of Washington. Snow was pouring down the whole weekend. There were five of us in all: me, Nick, Timothy, Julie, and Erica. That Saturday morning, the morning after we had arrived, the two guys decided to do some skiing, though, personally, I don't think the snow was anywhere thick enough to do skiing of any sort. The rest of us decided to play with an old Ouija board Nick's parents had hidden away. The thing was so dusty, but everything seemed to be in working order. Erica decided it would be even more fun if we turned out all the lights and lit some candles. So, we did. It was pretty creepy, but that's the fun of it. We didn't have one of those planchette things, so we used a small shot glass. And no, none of us had been drinking. First off, we asked if there were any spirits around. Nothing. We waited about a minute, but nothing happened. Then, we asked if there were any beings here besides us. And again, after waiting for a minute or two, there was no answer. Maybe we didn't set it up right, Erica said. What do you mean? I asked. She gave me this awkward smile. I recognized that smile. She always had it when she had a bad idea. A good idea to her, but generally a bad idea. It made me feel a bit uneasy. She answered, "We've got candles. Now let's make a blood pact." What the hell, Erica? Julie wasn't happy with her suggestion. What do you mean, pact? I was curious, I must admit. Let's put our blood on the board, she explained. You know, make it more spiritual. I bet you something will answer. It sounded spooky, and I've always been a fanatic for all things creepy, so I agreed to it. Julie, however, was having none of it. Erica and I pricked our fingers with a pen and tried to let the blood drip on the board. We ended up just wiping it on there a bit. I was already regretting my decision. The three of us placed our hands back on the shot glass and started again. "Are there any spirits here with us?" we said together in attempted unison. Almost immediately, we felt the shot glass move. All of us jumped back when we felt it. We looked at each other, each silently asking the other, "Are you moving it?" Our blank expressions told us none of us were. We watched very anxiously as the glass rolled over a few letters. N-O-T-H-E-R. In my head, I read "nother" or "nother" and had no idea what that meant. "What do you mean?" Erica suddenly spoke aloud. We felt it move over the same letters, this time pausing between the T and the H. "Not her," I breathed. Erica and I leered at Julie, quickly understanding that it was probably talking about her. She was the only one who hadn't pricked her finger. Julie jerked her hand away from the shot glass with a worried look on her face. "Not her." A raspy whisper came from just outside the cabin. Now, Erica and I both jerked our hands away, too. All of us stood, staring toward the wall where the front door was. "Not her." It came again, somehow closer than before. I could feel goosebumps all over me at that point. Then came the scratching sound at the door. "Nick, stop it," I screamed. He had played pranks on me before. I guess I just ignored the fact that he wouldn't have known what was spelled out on the Ouija board. So why would he be outside whispering like that? Erica, breaking all the usual horror movie tropes, ran toward the door. I ran after her, Julie whimpering behind us. She pulled the door open. Outside, something pale with crazily long limbs scurried away on all fours. We saw it together for about 2 seconds before it broke into the edge of the woods. The thing was the size of a child, hairless and pale as the snow itself. That's about as much as I saw before it was out of sight. Before I could even think of blaming Nick or Timothy, I saw them, backs against the outside wall toward the corner of the cabin. The fuck was that? Nick was visibly shaken. Timothy just stood there without a word, staring into those woods. We all gathered inside that night, all the lights on and the curtains pulled over the windows. Nick and Timothy explained how they had just gotten back when they saw that pale creature clawing at the front door. They said they wanted to be rational, that this must have been a hairless animal of some sort, but we all doubted that it was anything less than paranormal. I will never again use a Ouija board, and going alone into the woods will forever be out of the picture. Number 25. Nearly Bitten by a Werewolf. Submitted by Essence Child. Ever since this event, I've been pretty paranoid. I don't like my feet to be uncovered in bed, and I hate going barefoot. In fact, I can't seem to stop thinking about something grabbing or biting my ankles when they're exposed. Maybe I feel that I'm most vulnerable there physically, that I can't run fast enough from something that might chase after me. So, let me tell you why I'm so shaken. A few years ago, the year was 2011, I lived in a scarcely wooded area in southern Michigan. We weren't too far from civilization, but we were far enough that we had plenty of privacy. Plus, it was always quiet. We had lived at the place since I was born. It was my childhood home. All my memories come from that small house. I didn't mind the dilapidated wood or creepy nights. My siblings and I had a lot of fun playing hide-and-seek, tag, or simply pretending to fight off trolls and dragons. A nerd in training, I'm sure. One weekend, I believe it was a Saturday night, my parents invited friends over. They would do this sometimes. They would barbecue ribs and pork tenderloins. They would drink with friends from work. It was fun. It never really got too wild. But it always meant that none of us were getting much sleep that night. They were loud, and I was too much of a light sleeper, so I could have either stayed in bed and tried to go to sleep, or stay up with them. I decided I would take my two little brothers out to the nearby woods for a game of hide-and-seek. Now, these woods are very thin, and we had grown up in them. We didn't think it was too spooky or strange to be running around and playing hide-and-seek in the woods at dark. I decided to be it. I loved hiding and seeking, but those other two always threw a fit when either of them had to seek first. I didn't mind. I nestled my arms and head into a tree and started counting out loud. The sound of my parents' gathering still audible in the distance. I could hear those two running around, trying to decide where to go. Eventually, their footsteps faded away and they found their places. After 30 anxious seconds, I turned to the darkness of the forest and scanned my surroundings. My heart sank. I guess I hadn't realized it while my eyes were closed. But I was alone now, in the dark, in the middle of the woods. Or maybe I was just getting a little spooked because my parents' noise had died down a bit. I swallowed hard, determined to find my brothers as soon as possible. We might just have to cut this game short. The first spot to check that came to my mind was the old shack about 5 minutes out. I knew that's where one of them had to be. The shack had always been off limits, and making it off limits seemed to make them think it was the best possible spot to hide in. I was hesitant to walk further away from the house, but the sooner I found those boys, the sooner we could go home. After a few minutes of walking, I came upon the old shack. It was run down and decades old. The wood was falling apart in places, and animals had made their marks on it, whether it was with claws or horns. "Jason," I called. "You never know when you can get them to giggle or accidentally call back and give away their position." There was no response. I smiled and stepped closer very quietly. Again I called, "Jason." Suddenly, his pale face appeared through a hole in the wood wall. His eyes were darting all over the place. Finally, he stared at me and waved for me to get inside. "Found you," I laughed. "Shh," he shushed me. "Get in here." I gave him a confused look. "Why? Come on out. I found you." He whispered loudly at me again. "Just get in here." I rolled my eyes and walked inside. The moment I stepped through the doorway, he pulled me inside and shut the door. Then he shoved an old 2x4 against the door latch. "What's your problem?" I found myself whispering, too. He put a finger to his lips to quiet me and pointed out of the hole he had just been speaking through. Confused and irritated, I got up on my knees and peeked through the large hole. Immediately, I fell back and kicked myself away from the wall. I covered my mouth, otherwise it would have let out the loudest scream. When I looked through that hole, standing exactly where I had been standing only seconds ago, a creature at least 6 feet tall stood, staring in through the hole right at me. It had an arm stretched out against a tree, as if it was holding itself up. The thing was covered in fur that got thicker the further up towards its head it got. Its face reminded me of both a person and a bear. I found myself hoping that it was just a bear standing up, that we had just found ourselves face to face with something natural. I found myself crawling back to get another look. My curiosity took hold. I had to be sure of what I was seeing. But the moment my face shone through that opening, all I could see were dozens of teeth before I jumped back again. That thing had snapped at me. It then began to sniff the wall. I could hear it huffing the air. My brother quickly shifted over next to me, and we held on to each other. I began to panic. My other brother, Joey, was still out there. I had no idea where he was hiding. I prayed that he was okay. I could see the silhouette of this animal as it walked around the shack. Every so often, it would claw at the thin, worn boards. Tears fell from my face. At that point, I think both of us were crying. We waited there for at least an hour before the sounds were gone. Whatever was out there had left, but we continued to wait. We waited until familiar voices shouted for us. Our parents and their friends had come to look for us. I was so happy, but too afraid to move. My body kept me from getting up and going outside to meet them. Eventually, though, my father kicked the shack's door open with ease, and my brother and I ran into his arms crying louder than ever. As I opened my watery eyes and looked around, I saw Joey standing with my mother. It looked as if he had been crying, too. At the moment, I thought he was afraid he'd never see us again. It wasn't until later that month, when we weren't too afraid to sleep in our own rooms again, that Joey told me he was crying. He said he had hidden under some brush not too far from where I had been counting. He watched as I finished counting and walked off toward the shack. He said only a few seconds after I had begun walking, he saw something tall, something covered in gray fur walking slowly behind me, walking on two legs like a person. Number 26.